Today is July 12, 2017, and this is episode number 419 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am the proud owner of a cowboy hat. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note. Pew, 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 pew. At ACM at MacObserver.com.
Oh my God.
I go to Texas for 2 weeks. I come back a cowboy. What's up with this?
You come back a cowboy that can't even do a good gun sound.
Well, you know, it's like I started to go for the gun sound, and then I thought, like, oh my God, you know, I'm trying to follow up Melissa, but you know, at the same time, Melissa's, you know, pew pew, that doesn't really quite go with the you know, gunslinger cowboy persona.
Oh, I don't know. I've actually seen her do pew 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 in person, and it's so adorable. It goes with everything.
Fair enough. All right, so just a fail, but it's good to be back. You did a show with Jeff Butts, I believe, while I was gone?
Yeah, I did a show with Bob Levitis, and I did with Jeff Butts.
And I had dinner at Bob Levitis's.
Did he give you a hug that went on just a little bit too long?
Yes, he did.
For me?
Yes, yes. Excellent. Yes, he did. But we had a barbecue at his place. It was lots of fun. Good times. You know, I saw the Texas Capitol for the first time. Would you believe that I've been to the grounds before.
But are you serious? I've been to the Texas Capitol before you?
Well, I've been to the Capitol scores of times. Before 9/11, you could just, we would, when our scooter gang would get together. That's right. I was in a scooter gang, and we would, you could drive up.
You could drive. That's up. That's right. I was in a scooter gang.
That's right. That's right. I was. What of it? And then, boy, I got to be honest. You know, we'd probably shoot you today. Anyway, so you could just drive your scooter or your car right in the driveway that just goes right there by the building. And you know, we'd regularly do that because it was such a lovely drive. And what's my point? I had a point. It was a great point. It was the best point of all time. And I'd certainly hung around on the grounds before, mm-hmm. but I'd never been inside the building.
You know, I was in the Capitol. It was a few years ago. I was down speaking at CatMac, and Sinanzi Gravely and I went and explored the Capitol together.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, to be fair, I've lived in Colorado and spent all kinds of time in Colorado for years. Mm-hmm. Never been skiing in my life.
Did you at least go to the Mint, the Denver Mint?
No,
Denver Capitol.
No, I'm a very proud pneumismatist, and no, I've never been to the Mint.
All right,
I have coins that were minted in the Denver Mint, but I've never been to the Denver Mint, despite having been to Denver. Now, to be fair, I haven't spent a lot of time in Denver. It's always been sort of a like passing through kind of thing. I have. Been called
Space Cowboy?
No, but I was Gangster called an epithet for a homosexual in Denver.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, there are some narrow-minded people here.
Yeah. But this was a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay, then rite of passage for being in Colorado, or penance, depending on your perspective, Casa Bonita?
Casa Bonita, no, I have not. That's believe okay. that or not.
You do not. Just don't. Just no.
I've seen the South Park episode. Does that okay. count?
Yeah, that's actually so stunningly accurate. I mean, like, seriously, I remember watching that episode and I had tears running down my face from laughing and it's all true. Every little bit of it. I mean, the Black Bart's Cave, the cliff divers, the
isn't the that flags. Owned by the same company that owns Taco Bueno? No, Taco Bueno.
I don't know.
I want to say that it is, and I worked for Taco Bueno, so does this count?
Oh, now, see, now we're finding a career that you had that I didn't know about.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Boy, man, we are off to an epically tangential start.
You know, I want to point out that the 2 weeks that you were gone on work release, vacation, man, we jumped right into the show and we ran with it. And I got a compliment on the show I did with Jeff Butts last week. Mm-hmm. So if you ever decide that you want to retire from the show, people loved having Jeff on.
Is this a hint?
Ooh, look at the time. And that's this week's Up a Context Machine. No, I'm just letting you know that people love you, but they also really enjoyed last week's episode with Jeff.
All right. Well, fair enough. It's good. I'm glad. I'm glad he was able to do it. But
it's really nice to have you back.
Yeah, apparently. I can see.
Yeah.
I can see how nice it is, Jeff. All right. So we are off to an epically tangential and slow start.
Oh, so my let's God, you're still here.
Yeah, let's get down to the real business of using you and our listeners to figure out what the heck I'm going to talk about at Mac Stock.
Oh my God, I love you and I have missed you, Brian. I really am glad you're back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Again, obviously.
Obviously. All right. So how about if I give people a little bit of a preamble so that they get why we're doing this and why I laughed so heartily. So Brian and I and Dave Hamilton, we are all speaking at Mac Stock this weekend. So that's July 14th and 15th. Did I get the dates right?
Yes.
15th and 16th. And
where is that?
This is in Crystal Lake, Illinois.
Hold on, I'm writing this down.
Yeah. So that's Saturday and Sunday, Brian.
Right, Saturday and Sunday, where I'm going to speak at 9:15 in the morning.
I'm
making me speak in the a.m., early in the a.m.
Right. And now
they've clearly not met me.
No, this is part of the reason why I'm laughing, because when you told me, so listeners, Brian told me what time he's speaking before we started recording, and we basically had to stop the pre-show for a few minutes while I just sat here and laughed. I'm speaking on Saturday and at a more godly hour, and and actually then later on in the day too.
Oh, you're doing two?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What's the second one on?
It's the second one is a deep dive into smart home technology.
Okay. Well, I say that as if I knew what the first one is. What's the first one?
It's how to get started with smart home devices for the average person.
Isn't the deep dive the thing that they do outside of the main hall where people can come and hang out with you and talk?
Yeah. Yeah. So the people that come to the deep dive, we're going to like really go into the technical details about whatever question they have and troubleshoot if we need to for their systems and come up with ideas for how they can.
So that's like a conversation, like a personal, you're going to be their personal.
When I get on stage and have a presentation, that's like a conversation. It's like a personal conversation with everyone in the room.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Touch.
Yeah. So, but the real point is that the times that I'm speaking are great.
Yeah, because they're not at 9:15 in the morning. Right. Anyway, nonetheless, I'm speaking at 9:15 in the morning and in like 3 days. And I kind of have this loose idea about what I want to talk about, but I don't, as our listeners know, we don't prep anything. At least I don't prep anything. So I thought what we could do is sort of do a dry run. I mean, here's my ugly secret. When I speak at Mac user groups, really what I'm doing is I'm doing the Apple Context Machine, but without you.
Oh, sort of like when I did Apple Context Machine last week without you. People loved it.
Right. Except for the loving part. Yes.
Yeah, I mix those up.
No one loves what I do. Anyway, but that's not true.
That's not true.
So I usually kind of speak off the cuff about whatever's important going on in the app world at that time. I like to provide context. That's sort of what I obsess over.
Hence the context machine.
Yes, you see what we did there?
You're like a walk and talk and context machine.
Yes.
Yippee-ki-yay.
And the thing that's been on my mind, the name of my talk is these Apple times, they are a changing.
All right. Well, then my first question for you is, what do you mean they're changing? In what way?
Well, they're changing because Apple is becoming a very different company. And that was a cheating title, to be honest. That was a title.
Apple always becoming a different company? I mean, it's a slow process. They were the company that made the first accessible personal computer, but then eventually it took a long time. But then they became the company that revolutionized the digital music industry. And then they became the company that was all about.
Yeah, but it was all related. It was all related, though, right? It was all pretty much still the computer company. I mean, yeah, Apple dropped Apple Computer, but I posit that Apple is becoming much bigger than a computer company. And listen, there was a very specific. So all right, so I had this catch-all title that was essentially a cheating way for me to be able to decide what I was going to be talking about at the time of the show.
That's very clever.
You like how I did that?
So basically, what you did was you became an enabler for yourself so that you could procrastinate all the way up until they complete the introduction for you on stage.
So you have met me. I see now. I see. Yes, you have actually met me. All right. Well, but here's the thing. This business that happened right before I left, Scott Forstall gave that presentation at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And everybody was all agaga about it.
Yeah, people were all like, man, they need to bring him back. Was he on stage giving his informal interview for Apple to come back and be CEO? Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Right?
Yeah.
And here is what my immediate gut reaction to that was. Mm-hmm. Scott Forstall would be possibly a great comeback CEO for Apple if you want Apple to remain a Mac and iPhone company.
Okay. Why do you say that? do you like how I'm helping you work through this?
Yes. You're being the enabler today. That's great. Because Scott's vision, his excellent vision, mind you. I mean, like, I understand why Tim Cook fired him. And I actually think Tim Cook was right to fire him. And I also think that Tim Cook had to fire him from the standpoint of this was Tim's first real test as a CEO. Well, okay, so let's back up, right?
Okay.
Apple is doing the Apple Maps thing.
Right. Yeah. Scott Forstall was there when Apple broke away from Google Maps and started doing their own mapping service.
Right. And the Maps team was answering to him because he was head of iOS. Mm-hmm. And the Maps rollout was crap.
And it definitely had some issues.
And Tim Cook wrote an apology letter to Apple customers.
Now, the lore says that Tim wanted Scott to write the letter and Scott said no.
The lore says that Scott refused to sign it.
Or that Scott refused to sign it. That's right.
Right. Now, that was Tim Cook's first big test as CEO. Here's Scott Forstall, a key senior vice president. Mm-hmm. A key software engineer for Apple. A brilliant man. Mm-hmm. The man who really made iOS live. And someone that many people probably without like a lot of the executives, because the lore also tells us that a lot of executives couldn't stand Scott.
Mm-hmm.
There were some, I believe, I think Johnny Ive was one. Again, we don't do any research here. So
no, research gets in the way of interesting topics.
Absolutely. And I don't remember the exact names, but I want to say that Johnny Ive, and it may too have been even Phil Schiller. But maybe it was Johnny Ive. There were a couple of executives who wouldn't have an executive meeting with Scott Forstall unless Tim Cook was there.
That's pretty bad.
Right. And but, you know, I mean, maybe they were in the wrong. Who knows? I doubt it, by the way. My guess is that Scott Forstall was difficult to work with. That's my understanding, is that Scott Forstall was difficult to work with.
Well, considering who all these people are, I can imagine at times they're all difficult to work with. But I gather he was consistently difficult to work with.
Right. And not only that, but now here comes this big test for Tim Cook. Apple has had a botched rollout under him. All eyes are on him.
Mm-hmm.
People are already talking about how Apple can't innovate without Steve Jobs. And you have a key president, a key senior vice president with a lot of adherence within Apple, and he's bucking the CEO. He refuses to sign the letter. Tim Cook's got to fire him.
Yeah.
If Tim Cook wants to run Apple in the wake of the most iconic CEO possibly in corporate history dying, he has to nip this in the bud, and it cannot be okay for a senior vice president or anyone else to tell him no. It can't be. You can't. If he didn't nip that in the bud,
he would have had no authority in the company.
None. And Apple would have become a rudderless, chaotic mess.
Yeah. So I agree. He did exactly the right thing.
He did the only thing he could do, even.
Mm-hmm.
And which stinks. And also, I think that I've never met Scott Forstall. Again, brilliant. I've felt that Scott Forstall is one of these brilliant guys who takes all the stories about Steve Jobs being a jerk and then uses that to excuse jerky behavior. You cannot take Steve Jobs's lore about being a jerk in isolation, because there's so many other aspects of Steve Jobs. There is his ability to lift you up also. Mm-hmm. There is his stunning vision, and there his his jerkiness was always precise, surgical. And a lot of numbnuts here in Silicon Valley just think that, well, yeah, you know, Steve Jobs was a dick. So, you know, I'm going to be a dick too, and because I'm awesome also. And I always kind of felt that Scott Forstall might have been actually just sort of taking that example. Of course, let me actually turn that on its head. Scott Forstall may also have been a Steve Jobs never apologized. What are you doing to this company?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just move on. Who cares that it was a botched rollout? People will forget about it. By the way, we forgot about it, but part of how you forgot about it is Apple apologized and then fixed it.
Right. Yes, there's that.
So, you know, he may have thought that Tim Cook's mamby-pamby apologizing was destroying. I have no idea what was in his head, but I mean, you can make an argument either way, but I really do think that Tim Cook did the only thing he could do. It may have even been good for Scott Forstall to be canned, although I was really hoping that Scott Forstall was going to go on and do something really awesome.
Hey,
in the field of technology.
Oh, in the field of technology.
Yeah.
He's won Tonys.
Yeah. Which is also awesome. And so here's where we come back to this. He does this presentation for the Computer History Museum. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's interesting. Everyone sees, you know, like how he might be able to fix some of the things that we perceive as being wrong with an Apple. And we start thinking about, you know, we start wanting him to be the second prodigal son to be cast out of Apple, who's going to come back and fix everything.
Yeah, I get why a lot of people looked at the what he did at the Computer History Museum and would see that. And I think for a lot of people, thinking, oh, he needs to come back and fix what's wrong with Apple, can translate to he needs to come back to Apple and make it like it was before, because that's the Apple that I want. And they don't want it to change. They want it to be the company that makes the cool Macs.
And little else. And we've seen, and we've talked about this in so many ways, and we talked about it often. I mean, I get that. Like, you know, I think what we both come down is that we want Apple to be able to iterate on Macs and iPads and iPhones and iOS and Mac OS while it also works on the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, Apple was entirely failing on iterating on its existing products. And then hopefully we saw that dam finally break at WWDC when Apple announced, 13, 14, 15 new products, something like that. New services and products.
They announced a year's worth of products in 2 hours.
Right. Which is great. So, but here's the thing. There are those next big things. There's the AR play that Apple's working on. There is the non-invasive glucose monitoring technology that Apple is working on. There's the stuff with cars that Apple is working on. And then those are just the things that have leaked.
Mm-hmm.
I posit that Scott Forstall would be a great CEO if you want Apple to remain a Mac and iPhone company.
All right. I was wondering where you're going to take all this. And so what I'm getting from what you're saying is that Scott Forstall is the right CEO for people that want Apple to go back to the company it was, not the company it's evolving into.
Yeah. I think that Tim Cook is taking Apple in a huge, big direction, possibly even bigger, possibly. Of course, who knows how much of this Steve Jobs actually influenced while he was still alive, but possibly into an even bigger company than Steve Jobs could have. I'm not saying that Tim Cook is better than Steve Jobs. He is absolutely different. I think that Tim Cook's vision for Apple is bigger than anybody else's vision for Apple right now, including us out here in the world of Apple fans and pundits and journalists and whatnot. I think that Tim Cook is making Apple into the biggest company the world has ever seen or will ever see or will have ever seen at that point. The stuff with cars, the stuff with HomeKit, the stuff with being all over, being at the point where we spend our lives, right? This is something that Phil Schiller said within the last year, that Apple wants to be everywhere where we spend our lives.
Okay, so we're talking about Apple doing some potentially exciting and very innovative things in these different technology spaces. Scott's a technology guy. Why would he be a bad choice to lead Apple down that path?
Well, I'm not saying that he would be a bad guy to lead Apple down that path. What I'm saying is that Scott's demonstrated vision is much narrower than Tim's demonstrated vision. Well, I don't know. Some people might argue about the demonstrated. Right? Scott's demonstrated vision is software. It's software. It is software, and maybe one could argue the hardware in which that software runs. But I don't think that we've ever seen anything from Scott Forstall to say that he would have thought about the importance of non-invasive glucose monitoring and then made that a reality. And the thing about non-invasive glucose monitoring is that could possibly be one of the biggest inventions, one of the most important inventions that humanity has ever seen. It's going to be life-changing for tens of millions of people.
So basically you're saying when we look at our pinnacles of technological achievement, we have Fire, the iPhone, and then Apple's blood glucose monitoring system.
Yeah, for people with blood sugar issues, it is going to be massively life-changing. Massively life-changing. And we don't know what other things Apple is working on in terms of the biotech world.
Yeah,
the medtech world would be a bit more accurate.
Yeah. I'm guessing that if Apple can actually pull off this this blood non-invasive blood glucose monitor system, that it really will be a revolutionary change
for the people. And people for whom it doesn't affect are probably dismissing and yelling and throwing things at the radio.
Don't throw too hard. You'll break the vacuum tubes.
Exactly. Which is fine. You can call me an idiot all you want. I think that assuming Apple can actually bring this technology to market, I suspect I will be shown to be right, but we will see. Maybe Scott Forstall could have done that too. But okay. And so let me turn that back on its head. Okay. If we had someone like Scott Forstall running Apple, I think you could probably bet $1 million that iPhone and Mac and therefore iOS and Mac OS would in fact get the attention that all of us want those products to get. I get that. And that is important also. But I think that from a corporate standpoint, from a taking everything that Apple has, which is like all of the things at this point, in terms of resources, mm-hmm. and leveraging that into turning Apple into a bigger company without becoming like General Electric, where they just like start doing all of the things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that Tim Cook has got a huge vision for Apple, and that really, I think that that's the real reason Steve Jobs picked him in the first place. Let's come back to that fact. Steve Jobs could have picked Scott Forstall to run his company.
Yeah. And there were people that were speculating that could happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Steve Jobs did not pick Scott Forstall to run his company. He picked Tim Cook. It's always driven me nuts that people would talk about how irreplaceable and awesome and fantastic and one of a kind that Steve Jobs was, which he was, all of mm-hmm. those things, and then like dismiss the person that same person chose to replace him. Like, he picked him for a reason.
I always thought that was odd too. And I my perception on that, or my perception on that is that there are people that really wanted Steve Jobs Mark II, and no one is Steve Jobs Mark II, and so they decided because Tim Cook isn't a clone of Steve Jobs that they don't like him. And,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and he also has politics that people don't like. Plays in. Okay. A lot of people don't like Tim Cook's politics.
All right. Well, that's
nothing. And Tim Cook let some of those politics show through Apple's corporate activities. I would argue that only those activities that Tim Cook actually thinks pertain to Apple, but that's another.
Well, if you're not comfortable with the politics, it doesn't matter if they are good politics for Apple or not. You just don't like the politics.
Right. Right. So anyway, I think for a long time, I thought that Steve picked Tim Cook because he saw in Tim Cook the man who could transition Apple away from Steve's leadership and is the only man who could manage that transition. But I think maybe it was even bigger than that. I think that maybe Steve Jobs recognized that Tim Cook has vision. It is utterly different than Steve's vision. Utterly different. And there are all kinds of skills that Steve Jobs had that Tim Cook does not have, for sure. And I don't want to make any bones about that. But I think that Tim realizes that Tim Cook does have vision. It may not be the vision every Apple fan wants for him to have, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have it. That don't mean that he don't have no vision. It just says that maybe that vision is a little bit peculiar in the eyes of some folks.
Oh my God.
Oh. Yep.
All right. So if we run with Scott Forstall isn't coming back, which I think is a totally reasonable thing to assume at this point.
Yeah.
And Tim Cook will continue running the company.
Yeah. Not forever.
Not forever, but for now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a given. No one is running the company forever. Someone else will always come along. But Tim has his vision, and based on what we are seeing right now.
Wait, hold on. At least until we get iClone, but go ahead.
Until we get iClone. Yeah. And then iClone 2, and then iClone 2S. And right. When we get to Bray and iClone 2S Plus,
yes,
that's where I draw the line. Cameras on the front and back of you, that's out of the question. Anyhow, where do you see Apple heading? And I'll narrow this down for you. So it's either easier because you have a smaller window to look at, or harder because you have a smaller window to look at. Where do you see Apple heading over the next 10 years?
In the next 10 years, we're going to see Apple entering new markets that run way far afield from Apple's original Macintosh. It wasn't even telegraphed. We were just told Apple wants to be where we live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the smart homes. It's going to be, they're going to be doing something with cars and ride sharing. And it's going to be in the medical, in the field of medical technologies. And I don't know specific, other than the things that we've already been told are coming, AR, VR, from a rumor standpoint, the car stuff, and also the medical technology stuff, that we know Apple is working on and that Apple has been rumored to be working on too. Other than those, I don't know what those other things are going to be, but I'm actually quite confident that Apple has projects that we don't know anything about yet because they've been kept entirely in house and the teams that are working on them are still small enough to keep a secret.
All right. Yeah,
it's not until Apple gets into that 1,000-person team that we know that they had working on AR and that we know they had working on the car, this stuff starts leaking when it's kept internally. And then, of course, when Apple actually gets anything into the supply chain, then the company looks like crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then do you think that Apple's current bread and butter product lineups are going to be secondary to what they have in the future, meaning the Mac, the iPhone, the iPad, these types of products are going to be a smaller part of what they do while they focus on these other places where they can have a new
impact? Yeah, absolutely. Ever smaller. Well, iPhone, I'm not sure about iPhone, but ever smaller in terms of the Mac. In terms of the Pi. But here's the deal. Don't lose faith in having a Mac on your desk or on your lap for as long as Apple needs them to make all of the other things possible. Apple still needs Macs to make iOS and to design iPhones and to make advertising campaigns. So until something comes along that completely replaces the Mac, at which point I think we will all be less concerned about the Mac by definition, until that happens, Apple's going to continue to make Macs. Now, the question is going to be whether or not Apple can properly divert enough secondary resources to keep iterating on these very fundamental and key technologies of Apple, because they need the Mac, the iPhone. Phil Schiller told us straight up, the iPhone's going to be here for 50 years. It's eventually not going to look like the iPhone that we know today.
Well, but to be fair, if you pick up a Mac today, it does not look like the original Mac that shipped.
Right. Yeah, it's probably going to take some sort of direct brain interface to replace what we think of as the smartphone today. You know, the smartphones are going to be increasingly become our comm devs, our communication devices. Right. And you know, everyone's going to have their smartphone. I remember reading William Gibson, might have been Neuromancer. It might have been. No, it was not Neuromancer. It was not Neuromancer. And I can't remember which book it is. But everyone's walking, like everyone has their super powerful computer that they sort of carry around with them. That's what the iPhone is going to increasingly become. But we're still going to need these devices on our desks that are doing the heavy lifting, that are doing the productivity stuff. That's going to stay, but it's going to become an ever smaller piece of Apple's pie. Mm-hmm. iPhone will eventually become less dominant in Apple's pie. So I guess, yeah, it'll get smaller too, but it's still going to be bigger and bigger and bigger.
You know, considering that everything is becoming more and more mobile, including our desktop computing experience, mm-hmm. do you see a point where Apple takes that part of the experience and takes that back into their own servers? And then the computers that the Macs that we're using in the future would be more like dumb terminals or limited functionality devices. And most of what they're doing is coming from Apple's own big server farms.
You know, that's such a good question. Do you remember when dumb terminals were going to be all the thing again back in the late 90s?
Yeah, I do.
And then it didn't happen.
Yeah. And they called it thin client because it's
the thin client
dumb terminal. But yeah.
Right. Right. That was the thin clients were going to be the thing. And we didn't get a world of thin clients. And that is in part because as powerful as servers can be, when you deal with inherent latency of doing anything in over the internet, a local computer is still going to be more powerful, still more capable. Plus, you know, Apple does have that whole, like, we actually give a crap about your privacy thing going on. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm just tossing that out there. It's not like I'm thinking this is really going to happen, but
yeah, of course.
I could see it would be an interesting way to redefine how we use our computer technology, where it truly becomes a thing where it doesn't matter what device you have. It's just how big is the window into your data. And by window, I mean the size of the screen on the device.
Right.
And then you can just go anywhere and all your data follows you all around the world all the time. And the bandwidth we have available to us today is so much greater than what we had in the 90s.
But it's still not enough.
Yeah, but it's still not enough. But look at where we are.
It'll happen. It'll happen for sure. That'll happen. But you know, I would rather have the data I keep at my house follow me everywhere I go. That's what I'd rather have. Yeah, I'm less interested than having data be on the cloud.
Okay, then. That's a really good thing. A really good point. I have that right now. I mean, I love that I can be looking at or working with a document on my iPhone and then go over to the couch and pick up an iPad and the same document's there and I continue to work with it. And then later on, I'm in my office, same document's on my Mac. And I love that.
Through a combination of handoff and cloud and iCloud, right?
Right. Or Dropbox. But,
you know, when it comes down to it, we don't really need the cloud to accomplish that. what we need are network services and infrastructure to go with the ability to have our data be ubiquitous between our devices. Right now, everyone is doing that through the cloud because it's a little bit easier and a little bit cheaper, perhaps. But it doesn't require the cloud to do that. It really doesn't require the cloud to do that. As a matter of fact, I would say that in so many ways, it is better for us as consumers to have our information be local to be local to us and be controlled through our services, our servers, our home servers, even if the software and whatnot that's making that all possible is being managed by companies like Apple.
Okay, we're already seeing that to a degree. I'll use Dropbox as the example. If you have files that that you're storing on Dropbox and you have multiple devices on the same network that are using those files or have access to those files, they will synchronize between your devices locally as opposed to going to the Dropbox cloud server first and then back down.
Right.
And that's one of those things that I love. It's more efficient. And it just feels better to me knowing that all that content is just staying local while it's transferring around. Yes, I know eventually it ends up on the cloud, but that may be one of the first steps down the path that you are looking at or talking about right now. And do you think that's a path that Apple is going to lead?
I don't know, but I hope so. I hope so. We're in such early days for all this cloud crap. And the companies with the business model of surveillance, the surveillance capitalist business model have largely led this. And so we do have this cloud centric approach to everything. But yeah, I don't know where Apple's going to take us on that, but I hope that they continue to maintain their focus on our privacy. Tim Cook has said so many times that he thinks that privacy will become a selling point. Unfortunately, he hasn't been saying that recently.
Well, that may be a sign that he's done saying that. Mm-hmm. It may also be a sign that he needs to be focusing on the year's worth of products that they announced in 2-hour window. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that Apple's doing right now that needs to be the focus, like High Sierra, iOS 11.
Right. Right.
Amazon Prime coming to Apple TV, HomePod, and so maybe at some point later this year, when we're in the relative lull of product announcements from Apple, he'll say something again about privacy, and then it'll be back to products again.
Yeah, it could be. It could be, and it also could be simply that he hasn't been asked lately. Yeah,
that could be.
So there you have it. Now, I know that some of this dovetails into what we're going to talk about for your presentation about these being early days. Mm-hmm. So why don't we use that as the transition?
Sure, we can totally do that. All right. So we're going to be talking about something that right now that ties in to what my presentation will be, but this will be different. So this is like a fun side presentation, if you will. How's that sound?
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, because at MacStock, my first presentation is all about how you can get started into smart home technology without pulling all your hair out, without going crazy, without having to spend a fortune, and without having it become this ridiculous, overwhelming thing.
Okay.
But when we were kind of bouncing stuff around before the show, we came to the conclusion, and I think rightly so, that we're kind of in the Wild West phase of smart home technology.
Early days. Everything being done right now is going to be LOLable. Is that right? LOLable? You like sure. that?
I like
Let's
that.
Let's go with that. Okay. LOLable.
LOLable.
Within 5 years of the latest.
I'm thinking about that. 5 years in the latest.
I'm not saying that we're going to be at an endpoint in 5 years. I'm going to say everything that's happening right now, everything that we consider to be magical right now is going to be, oh, do you remember when Qt
Yeah. And actually, while some people are saying, oh, look at everything and how magical it is right now with smart homes, some days I say that. Many days I say, well, look at how everything with smart homes is a hot mess.
Oh, well, there's that. I know, by the way, I'm being pitched by Schlag to look at a smart door lock.
Oh, I think they may have pitched me as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I love the idea of a smart lock. I do not like the idea of an internet connected smart lock that is not secure. And I have lots of questions about security on all of the Internet of Things stuff, including, but most especially, smart locks.
All right. Well, how's this sound? Because this isn't something I've really been thinking about. Let me see if I can get Schlag to get a lock in my hands, and let's see if we can hack it.
Oh,
yeah. Well, we'll put it like on my office door, so yeah. It's on.
Shouldn't we maybe like get some actual hackers to do that?
Well, that's part just, of the, no. That's part of the whole thing. When I say we, I mean like the royal we, where it's everyone. I know that's not what royal we means, but it just sounded fun. No, so it would be we, a collective of people working to see if we can get through the security on this lock. All right, I like this plan. It will not go on my front door.
Also, all right.
Just to be clear. But we can... all right. We have a plan. We're going to make this happen. We're going to see if we can hack into one of these locks.
I like it.
But, you know, talking about the lock, I totally get why you are concerned about putting a smart lock on your door, especially because we've had reports from previous generations. And I know to say generation at this point for this kind of technology is kind of crazy. But previous generations, earlier models of smart locks where there was essentially no security to the device at all. And people were just walking, or they could walk down the street with a smartphone, look for a Bluetooth signal, and get someone's door to unlock.
Yeah, that is beyond ridiculous. But the entire, you know, the big problem with the Internet of Things is that there's no real incentive for most Internet of Things vendors to give a crap about technology, security. No one's buying for security right now.
And that's a real problem. And that's part of why this is such a chaotic mess.
Yeah, we the people need to be very concerned about security. If you're buying a smart device for your home, the very first question out of your mouth in your mind, let alone out of your mouth, should be about security. How are they handling security? What protocols is this device open to? And even as something that Dave Hamilton's talked about, what kind of off-the-shelf chips are they using with off-the-shelf firmware that could be compromised by third parties?
That's a really big question. And the scary thing is a lot of device makers can't answer that.
No, because it's the Wild West days.
Uh-huh. And now, in some cases, it's because the device makers just don't care. They want to get the next product out the door, and they want to be in people's minds and sell them stuff. But the other thing is, a lot of the device makers, they can't get information about the security that's baked into whatever chips they're using.
Because they don't control the whole widget.
Yeah. And there was a, I'm drawing a blank on what the product was that, it was a Qualcomm chip. Is that right? Just recently, like this year, that had a major Wi-Fi security flaw in it. and it had been there for years, and it's because the chip manufacturer just hadn't bothered to enable their own security features. And so what Apple had to do was roll out their own security patch to fix the problem that was in the chip, and it's a problem that had been there for years. So, I mean, this is
I don't remember any of these details. Was this something while I was on vacation?
No, this was, I want to say, last fall or this spring.
Oh, well,
I know it's prior to breakfast, so yeah, it's right. Just gone. I
mean, you know, and we are top men.
Yeah, top men. But the point is that we really are in such a Wild West phase right now that we have device makers, including device makers that are very, very aware of security, like Apple, that are still having problems because they are, to some degree, at the mercy of the vendors that are making the chips that they use.
Right. So, right. And if your chipset is being made in China, especially if it's being made in China by a Chinese company, it could very well be compromised by mandates from the Chinese government.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
That's a absolute huge thing. And of course, everything is made in China at this point.
Yeah, but okay, here's another problem. Many of the chips that are being used in these smart devices, they can't be flashed with the new firmware. So if a security flaw is found, that device is just out there in many cases without any way to patch it. And that's a big problem too.
That is also a big problem. So all of this is happening right now. This is why we have botnets out there of Internet of Things devices that are capable of bringing down websites. Right. And the trial run attacks that we saw, what, 3 months ago now? 4 months ago? Is that longer? Is that last fall?
Again, it was before breakfast.
So. Right. So at some point in the past, not too distant, there was the botnet attack of Internet of Things devices that were bringing down websites. Those were dry runs. Those were like, let's see what we can do. Let's test this.
And those were using web connected cameras.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's lots of other web-connected stuff. You know, at some point, web-connected cameras are going to be used to spy on people, to surveil them, to you know, film them in their homes and either blackmail them or be put for sale on the internet somewhere, right? That's going to happen. Governments, if they're not already, are going to use internet-connected things to spy on specific targets, which means that criminal organizations are going to use Internet of Things to spy on you for maliciously commercial reasons, not for surveillance or law enforcement or intelligence.
All right. So, and
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm going to throw a little bit of well, it's not a wrench. It's just another scary data point that goes a little bit outside of the smart home concept, but it still fits in with the whole interconnected communication thing. How many people have printers sitting in their homes or their offices that go onto the Wi-Fi network?
I do.
And when was the last time you got a security firmware update for that printer?
LOL.
Exactly. So whatever security issues are in whatever printer you have, the only way you can work around that is to unplug it.
Right. And the printers in particular are this market where we've had this disgusting and insane rush to the bottom. So that every single possible corner that can be cut has been cut. And that includes knowing what the heck is actually in the devices that are being made, right? I mean, like there's so many off-the-shelf components that are being used who knows the ways that those have been compromised?
Yeah. Well,
we weren't going to spend this part talking about just security, were we?
No, but this is a big part of the whole Wild West thing. And to equate it to the Wild West, there was a time when people would migrate out of the cities, move out to the plains or the mountains, and they would build their little log cabin to live in. And the front door was a blanket that was just tacked over the opening, not as a security measure, but to help keep the cold out at night. And in a way, I feel like that's where we are right now with smart home technology for a lot of these devices. Yes, you could go out and build your log cabin and put a strong door with a lock on it, but most of them, I think, are just hanging blankets over that opening.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it in a nutshell.
All right, so that scary discussion we just had, that's not the discussion I'm planning on having at MaxStock on Saturday. The discussion I'm going to have is, how do you pick out a device or devices to get started? And then how do you get into this in a way so that your eyes don't bleed and you don't start drinking incessantly?
So are you going to, is like the cheating version, get HomeKit accessible devices, or are you not going to be as narrow-minded as that? Because that's as narrow-minded as I am.
No, I am not going to be that narrow-minded, because HomeKit may not be the right answer for everyone, but it's a good answer for a lot of people.
It is if you're concerned about,
to a degree,
concerned about security.
Well, only if you get a device that supports nothing more than HomeKit.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Which is in my perfect world, that's what my smart home would be built on, is HomeKit only devices.
All right. Well, then you need to get real chummy with Elgato, because
right. I know, because yeah, they're like the only people that are doing it.
Yeah, and for everything else, even if you have devices that are HomeKit compatible and you're using them just with HomeKit, they support other protocols as well, and those other protocols are potential security issues for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just need to be aware. You need to be smart.
You know, at some point, this will be addressed. We're going to have calamitous events involving Internet of Things devices. And companies at that point will be forced to deal with this issue, either through legislation or through market forces, or both.
Yeah, it means that at some point, photos from the security cameras I have set up in my place may end up online. And I'll just apologize in advance. Look, everyone has taken up in the middle of the night to pee, okay?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there is going to be a calamitous Internet of Things event, or more than one. At some point, someone is going to become very serious about exploiting the botnets they already have out there.
Right. And it'll go beyond the dry runs that we saw a few months ago.
Yes. Yeah, and when that happens, hopefully that whole business about Tim Cook, we can bring this back. Tim Cook saying that privacy will become a selling feature. At that point, maybe that'll be true when it comes to the Internet of Things.
I hope so. I would like to see more security, and I'm glad for the improvements that I'm seeing already. And I'll be even happier when I see these devices locked down even more.
Yes, I will be too.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're kind of out of time. So, hey, Brian, do you have anything going on this weekend?
Well, son, I'm going to be at the Mac Stock. I'm going to give that presentation.
Oh my gosh. When is that?
It's going to be, I'm going to be doing that at 9:15 in the freaking morning on Sunday morning, July 16th, that's in Woodstock, Illinois, isn't it?
It's in Crystal Lake, Illinois, which is
Crystal Lake, Illinois,
Woodstock, Illinois.
Yep. Crystal Lake, Illinois. I knew that. Of course I knew that. I wasn't making things up or anything.
You're testing to see if I knew where we were going to be.
I was testing you, son. Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to be there. How about you, Jeff? You got anything going on this weekend?
Why? By coincidence, yes, I do. I'm going to be at Crystal Lake, Illinois at MaxStock, And I'm speaking on Saturday about getting started with smart home technology. And then that's earlier in the day. And then later in the afternoon, I'm doing a deep dive with everyone that wants to hang out with me. And we're going to really get into all of your smart home tech questions and problems.
Well, it sounds like right fun time, it do.
Boy, yes. Howdy.
Yep.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Now, if you want to follow my account, you can mosey on over to Twitter and look me up at TM O'Brien. Now, that's Brian with a Y, because that is the correct way to spell the Brian. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Bass is by Boom. That's recorded just for TMO, and that is all for this week.
And don't worry, we'll leave the line on for you, and stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.